You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is Mark Anderson, American Free Press's roving editor, and Jeff Smith, American Free Press's Eastern Bureau Chief. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us today.
Hello.
Thank you, Dave. No problem.
Now, both of you were at the United Nations conference on the Arms Trade Treaty, abbreviated ATT 2013. And this just wrapped up, I believe it was last week or the week before. It went from March 18th till March 28th, of course, 2013 in New York City. Both of you were there. Now, Jeff, you are from New York City. And
yes.
You live in Brooklyn, is that right?
Yes, I live in Brooklyn Heights, which is the area right across from Wall Street. It's essentially the area that all the Tories, the wealthy Tories, were put or gravitated to after the revolution. These are people that were so wealthy and powerful that you couldn't throw them out of the country, even though they were complicit in a lot of the horrors of what went on in the Revolutionary War, and they're still there. In other words, it's a place where all the representatives of the London banks live. That should be explicit for everyone listening.
Okay. How did you get over to the United Nations? Did you take the subway? Did you take the train? Did you take the bus?
Either you take the subway or you take a car.
Okay.
Here in New York. I took a car.
And from the 18th to the 28th, how many days did you attend the conference?
I was in and out of there surreptitiously. I'd say about 3 days.
Okay. Were you able to actually go into the United Nations?
I was able to access the grounds, yes.
Okay. So you went into the building itself?
Yes.
Okay.
Which is no mean feat, because my face is on numerous face recognition software, and believe me, if I show up in the wrong place in the wrong time, all the bells will go off. So naturally, we're trying to get over there, and we're trying not to trigger any. The State Department has a bunch of darlings as their intelligence people. They're always over there. The United Nations has their people. Various governments have their people. First of all, these conferences are layers of spies and intelligence gathering people, and now there's a whole layer of security people there, especially since 9/11, who are there ostensibly to keep the conference safe. What they're actually looking to do is keep any dissidents out.
Okay.
So the thing is that there is a large suppression field that's around the damn thing. That's true. But the thing is that on the other hand, as we will see later in the conversation, our side handed things to them.
Yep, we'll get into that. And Mark, how about you? How did you get into the Big Apple? Where'd you come from? How'd you get there? Where'd you stay? How long were you there?
I just went from the Midwest via train, and I was there about 5-6 days. Standard press credentials, kind of good cop, bad cop with Jeff and I. I'm just that amiable chap that doesn't raise a lot of alarm bells. And so I blend in and I get what I need and I observe the proceedings firsthand. So Jeff kind of worked the outer perimeter, if you will, and I went inside and just covered it like any other reporter. I'm just very experienced at this and I just know how to handle press credentialing and all these people and, you know, pretty much just be like any other reporter, but naturally digging much deeper. Much of the press there was, you know, rather lackadaisical. A lot of them are playing solitaire on their computers while the, you know, proceedings are going on. They're not real vigilant. They only handle the press releases and high points. Other than that, they're not doing a lot of digging. So really, just for me, it's just standard reporting 101. But that way, we have someone that's working the more conventional route and observing the proceedings inside while someone else is being a little bit more surreptitious. So it works out really well.
Okay. So you spent most of your time inside the United Nations, Mark?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. And you didn't have any problem getting in and making...
No. I've been doing this a long time. I think it's better in a way to have that inroad like that, because it shows people that AFP is serious. We're not just some underground publication and that we're going to get the info we need come hell or high water. So we expect to be treated no differently than the New York Times in that regard.
Right. And where were you put when you went inside? In a separate room watching things on a monitor, or how did it work out?
That was only at the end. They had such an overflow of diplomats, NGO people and reporters and observers on the last day when they adopted the treaty in terms of those representatives. It was actually fully adopted April 2nd by the General Assembly. But in terms of these delegates and the negotiations for the Arms Trade Treaty, on March 28th, the last day, there was such an overflow of all these different people that I was in a large meeting room watching the final vote of the delegates on a closed circuit TV. But for most of it, I was in the main meeting room watching it directly firsthand. A lot of it was rather tedious. And granted, you do kind of lose your attention once in a while because they're dealing with, do we want this semicolon over here? Do we want the word the over here? And they're dealing with a lot lot of minutia in the treaty at times, but there was two main meeting rooms, and then they had these side meetings, these breakout sessions. But as I indicated in the pages of American Free Press, about half those breakout sessions were closed to the press anyway. So yes, it was open to the press, this event, but the press was kept on a rather short leash, even if you got inside.
Okay. I just want to read something real quick before I ask you something, Jeff. This is from the UN's website, UN.org, disarmament/ATT. An overwhelming majority in the General Assembly voted in favor of the landmark Arms Trade Treaty, ATT, regulating the international trade in conventional arms, from small arms to battle tanks, combat aircraft, and warships. The treaty will foster peace and security by putting a stop to destabilizing arms flows to conflict regions. It will prevent human rights abusers and violators of the law of war from being supplied with arms, and it will help keep warlords, pirates, and gangs from acquiring these deadly tools. The United Nations will provide its full support toward making the treaty work.
There's an old saying that comes out of the Captive Nations Movement. The Captive Nations Movement is basically the movement that recognizes that 130 million people were killed by communism, the little fact of that. They have meetings every year, of course, from the United Nations. And what should be the case is that there's a wonderful statement that comes out and says, it's the freedom of a man in the arms of a bear. So yes, you're going to be living, but you're going to be in the arms of a bear, and the bear can crush you or dismember you any damn time it wants to. And you have no recompense. You have no way to resist this. This is, in crude English terms, what essentially is happening here. What they're doing is they're denuding people of all their rights and all their ability to resist. Let me tell you something. The system they're setting up here, and I've watched this since I was a kid. I'm from here. I'm from New York. I have dealt with these NGO people all my life, as a child, as a teenager, and now as an adult. And let me tell you something. Get it straight. What they're setting up here is a system where you're going to have all the rights of a radish. You're going to have no rights, or only the rights that they allow. It's like going to the car show today. Is it like 1966, where things were new and things were fresh and things were daring? No. Now, no matter what's out on the floor, it's what the government allows to be out on the floor. That's a very different atmosphere. And it's the same thing with all products today. Now, what's happening is now they're ending up where they feel strong enough to go after firearms. Now, I must tell you that this gun control treaty for the last 3 years, there has been an attitude towards it. And the only way I can describe it is the entire Upper East Side NGO banker finance related element in this town has been watching this glow-eyed, like a child watching their first Christmas tree. There's been this tremendous desire to see this thing go forward. There's been anticipation, and you'll notice that the federal legislation followed very closely on this. There are silly people out there that actually believe that there's no connection to this. Those people that believe there's no connection to this are exactly the kind of people who will end up in slavery, because this is absolutely a straight line of development.
Some listeners might hear this and think you're painting with somewhat of a broad brush here. Mark, what do you think about what Jeff had just said?
Well, I think that if you look at this closely, and if you look at past UN arms conventions and pacts, you see kind of a tapestry being woven. Many of us have heard of State Department publication 7277, Freedom from War. And what that publication, which has never been officially withdrawn, says is that eventually all arms would end up in the arms of the UN, and nation states themselves would surrender their arms to one global arms authority. You have a World Trade Organization, you'd therefore have a World Arms Organization. And that's never been officially revoked. Now, the Arms Trade Treaty at first brush looks somewhat less menacing. It doesn't look like it's as monopolizing as that early 1960s UN pact that is based on State Department 7277. And again, that's all the nations surrendering their arms to the UN. The Arms Trade Treaty doesn't look like it does that. But I think we have to be very careful and watch where this thing is headed. Just to give you an example, the Organization of American States is involved, and now they're saying that the Arms Trade Treaty will be open for signature beginning June 3rd of this year. That's a quick announcement of where this is headed. And prior things like the Ottawa Convention on Landmines, after they were ratified at the UN, ended up being enforced globally within 2 years. So if the Ottawa Convention on Landmines is any indication, the Arms Trade Treaty possibly could be enacted in about a 2-year period. I think that's important to note during our conversation. We might have a 2 to 3 year window, but I think if you look at all the UN arms conventions and you look at this, this is another piece of the puzzle to control international arms. And then the control of national armaments would be probably harmonized with that. And by the time you put it all together, you would have both domestic and international arms control. But it's also a lot of hypocrisy, as I wrote in AFP recently, and as Jeff has indicated in his writings, that the nation states like America that mostly support this treaty, that have wanted the arms trade treaty so badly, they're going to keep on drone bombing and weaponizing drones and doing whatever they want. And Israel is going to be allowed to keep attacking the Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank. And arms will continue to flow into these Syrian mercenaries that ostensibly this arms trade treaty would be designed to prevent. So there's huge hypocrisies involved. The powerful nations that want to keep spreading misery and genocide around the world, arms trade treaty or not, will be allowed to do so. That alone, in my opinion, invalidates the treaty if you looked at it from a utopian standpoint, and it's supposed to stop all these illicit flows of arms and stop all this genocide and bring wonderful humanitarianism. Well, let's have it. I mean, if it won't stop those things, it isn't worth the paper it's printed on anyway. And then, as Jeff and I are indicating here, it does seem to have a more underhanded, maybe less visible purpose, and that is to internationalize gun control even while domestic firearms are being targeted on the national level. So the UN, it works in pieces of a puzzle. So if you look at all the different arms packs and you look at the State Department 7277, and you know, you just kind of sit back and look at this, the UN probably would never have a new treaty that would invalidate any of its former arms agreements that are already in effect. So it seems like it's just going to monopolize the arms trade for the big countries, and genocide will continue. It's just that the big arms exporters will be more in control. So it's a multifaceted thing, but we got about a 2-year window. I think they need 50 nations to ratify it to bring it into effect, last I looked. So I think we need to just keep ringing the alarm bells and digging into this deeper and deeper.
The 50 treaties can be wonderful entities like Upper Volta or Rwanda, such centers of intellectual thought.
Yes.
So the bottom line is, look who's voting on this. Oh, did I say something politically incorrect? Those listeners out there, make the most of it. Listen to me carefully. I'm from New York. I've lived with these people all my life. Let me explain to you something. The total mantra of these people, the total belief of these, central part belief of these people, is that international treaties supersede the Constitution. This poisonous doctrine has spread through law schools in the last 40, 50 years. It is held by the financial community. It is held by much of the federal bureaucracy that I've spoken to during the last few years. And I can tell you right now, it is the central belief of the people that rule you. And there's something else, too. You've got to get something straight. Why this is so dangerous? You have got to forget the idea that Washington is the centerpiece of government. Listen to me. The NGOs and the banks are writing policy in this country. It only goes down to Washington as rubber stamped. Washington has become the ceremonial seat of government. The real seat of government, folks, is New York and darling London, in one other place. And the bottom line is that they form a trident, which all these occult groups have decided should rule the world. This is their crazy thinking. And you're right in the crosshairs now.
Where's the other country?
Iceland. It's the Eskimos. You're hearing the beautiful New York attitude. Do you know why I have this attitude, folks? Because of what I see here and what you in the Midwest and you in the South and you in the Far West, all of you, have allowed to happen here. What's going on here? Why aren't there tremendous crowds in the streets of New York to pull these people out of their buildings? Why is it that these people have careers where they're rolling in money and they're rolling in power unmolested? Why are they doing this to you? What's the matter? You can't get in your cars. You can't get on a plane. You can't, well, maybe not a plane, but a train, and come to New York and do something. What are you sitting out there and doing nothing for? See, this is the outrage of this thing, that they can sit in unbelievable arrogance here in New York and fire missiles into your communities and destroy your life, destroy your beautiful American way of life, confident. Why are they doing that? Because they're confident that you will not send a missile back at them, that you will not do anything to them effective. Why is it these characters in Congress are doing what they want? Why? Because they're keeping their job in Congress, and after Congress, they're going to get a nice partnership in a major law firm. There's going to be all those nice honorariums. If they cross the banks in New York, or they cross these internationalists on the Upper East Side, or they cross the state of Israel, or they cross the British, you know what's going to happen? They're going to have none of that. They're going to have a jail cell, and they all know it. And that's the reason why they're voting for this. And you know why that's happening? Because you lazy so-called patriots out there sit on your duff and you don't do anything. Why aren't you in the streets of New York? You want to have a Washington March? Now is the time to have it. Why is it that your gun organizations and your so-called conservative organizations are doing everything to anesthetize you? Say, we're fighting the good fight, and you stay home and give us money and don't do anything and let us do it. Well, listen to me. We're sinking like a rock. We're spiraling down. This is a nightmare that's happening in front of you. And you know what you're doing? You're sitting home and doing nothing. And that's why this is happening. And that's why I have the attitude. I live here, and I'm actually seeing what's happening to you from the base of firing that's injecting the poison into this country. Where do you think this is coming from? Nebraska? Do you think this is coming from Montana? San Diego? Where is this whole nonsense coming from? Where are the banks, and where are the NGOs, and where are the occult organizations that are actually doing this to you and changing Americans' lives and destroying the Constitution? And they'll do it, folks, and they're doing it right now. But why are they doing it? Because you're sitting on your duff and doing nothing. Thank you for letting me vent, but you deserved it out there. Every word.
Both of you guys mentioned Israel. Mark, let's start with you first. Why Israel? Why are they special in this matter?
Well, as AFP has reported so consistently, the ongoing flow of foreign aid and military materiel to the Israeli state from America, billions and billions a year and growing, has enabled them to create this gulag over the Palestinians, who most objective observers agree have the right to that homeland. And the treaty proponents say that preventing violence against women, preventing genocide, is part and parcel of the arms trade treaty. And when I was there, I asked numerous NGO people. No doubt a number of them were Upper East Siders like Jeff referred to. And they just kind of shrug and say, you know, whether they like what Israel's doing or not is immaterial. Israel will get what Israel wants. We'll have nothing to say about it. The ATT treaty will have nothing to say about it. And if we can't prevent the genocide of the Palestinians, if you're looking at this treaty from the point of view of its idealistic proponents, then what good would the treaty be anyway, even if it were the greatest thing on earth? And as Jeff is indicating, and as I've indicated, it's not the greatest thing on earth by any long shot, but the Israeli state is just going to get a get out of jail free card and get a pass on this and just be able to keep terrorizing and killing the Palestinians at will, basically for sport, as I see it. So that's pretty sad that that will remain unaffected, that that will remain a loophole in this so-called treaty. But as Jeff also indicated, and as I've written too, the treaty law should not be allowed to supersede the constitution of any nation, including ours. So if you have the idea that a treaty can override a constitution, that renders the whole idea of a constitution almost worthless, because treaties can be drawn up fairly frequently and step by step in terms of giving away our constitutional trade authority to the World Trade Organization. We've given away our money creation and money sovereignty 100 years ago this year. We gave it away to the Federal Reserve System. So you give away your constitutional authority over trade. You give away your constitutional authority over money, either through treaty or other agreements. And pretty soon you've given away the store. And so the arms trade treaty is probably going to harmonize all these different nations' policies under one roof and create a World Trade Organization for armaments. That's very likely to happen. And again, by this mechanism that treaties can override everything else, that renders invalid our laws. It renders invalid our constitutional protections. So that's a huge thing that the New Yorkers and the Council on Foreign Relations have been promoting that is on the Upper East Side and other organizations. And sure enough, the Organization of American States is involved in furthering this treaty, at least in some supplemental ways, maybe not a real direct involvement. And if I'm not mistaken, the OAS, their headquarters is right across the street from the CFR. Isn't that right, Jeff?
Yes. On 68th Street and Park Avenue.
Right.
Anybody can go there and see it.
You have two Upper East Side major think tanks right there that believe treaty law supersedes the Constitution and are basically a product of the international banks between the London and New York axis. The Royal Institute of International Affairs, Chatham House in London, is the precursor of the CFR right next to the Organization of American States. And that's basically what they do. They do write policy. The Congress rubber stamps. That's essentially true. There's a few exceptions here and there, but they handle the big stuff, the stuff that really matters, having to do with finance. finance, having to do with trade, having to do with war and peace, questions of war and peace. Foreign policy is manufactured at those organizations, literally. And so even under the best of circumstances, that's no way to govern, but this is hardly the best of circumstances.
Why do you think it is that after you queried these people, why do you think it is that Israel should get a, as you said, get out of jail free card? What reason did these people give that Israel should be exempt from this law?
Well, they would basically say that that's, you know, kind of a bilateral mutual defense pact between the U.S. and Israel, and say, you know, that kind of is its own thing. That's about all I could squeeze out of them over a cup of Java or a soup or something in the U.N. lounge. Kind of like that's on autopilot and that's its own separate thing. Same thing, interestingly enough, when I asked about the Fast and Furious straw buying, apparently by agents of the BATFE, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms and Explosives. We all know about that, where guns were bought through straw purchasing and under Eric Holder's nose. And Eric, the withholder, claims not to have known it, even though it was under his nose, the Attorney General of the U.S. And then those guns were reportedly transferred to some of the most dangerous of all, the Mexican drug cartels. And that, too, was seen as purely a domestic issue. And maybe it should be. I'm not arguing it shouldn't be. But that is another egregious example of illicit arms trafficking that these U.N. autocrats just kind of say, well, nothing can be done about that. Well, nothing can be done about that or about the transfers to Israel that they use against the Palestinians. Well, just how many loopholes is this treaty going to have that allows dangerous situations and abuses of human rights that are already happening, that allows those to keep happening? Just what is the point of a treaty that can't even stop those egregious things? And so it becomes a Gordian knot of contradictions and questions. And it would be far better if individual nation states pursued foreign policies of non-interventionism. It'd be far better if we brought our troops home, at least in most cases, and withdrew our military bases from Germany, for crying out loud. We don't need bases in Germany. And a more nationalistic operation of foreign policy and get away from this interventionism. That's what's going to bring peace and less armament and less killing, is to put a stop to internationalism and occupations and interventionism.
Jeff, I want to ask you, but you mentioned Israel, Jeff.
Yes.
Why does Israel have a special place?
Israel counts for one damn reason.
Go ahead.
Because everybody in the federal bureaucracy, everybody in most of the NGO world, everybody in Congress, everybody in every elected office around this country knows damn well what's going to happen to them if they cross Israel. You know why? Because Israel is exactly the opposite of the stupid American patriots. It's the opposite. Whereas if you cross Israel, you're dead. Hear me? You're dead. You're either going to jail or at least you're going to be unemployable the rest of your life. And they all know that. There are going to be no honorariums. There are going to be no big payoffs. There are going to be no big judgeships. There's no pot at the end of the rainbow. There's either a jail cell or poverty at the end of a rainbow for you and your family. And they know that because the Israelis retaliate.
Why is it that these people cannot cross Israel? You said that what would happen to people, you explain what would happen to people if they did cross Israel, but why is it that they can't cross Israel? What's so special about Israel?
Because Israel has a well worked out system of retaliation. They're exactly the opposite of the stupid American patriot. If anything doesn't go their way of a substantial nature, there will be a swift retaliation. Everybody in Congress, everybody in elected officials around the country, everybody in the federal bureaucracy, and in most areas of the NGO world here in New York, know damn well what's going to happen if they cross the state of Israel. If they become any kind of a substantial problem, at least they'll become unemployable or worse. There is going to be no golden retirement. There is going to be no partnership in a major law firm. There is going to be no honorariums, none of that. There's going to be unemployment and poverty.
So Israel controls the United States? So that fellow was right. What was his name? He said that, do we control America? Who was that? Jerome? Is that true?
First of all, a constellation of the greatest minds that the American patriotic community has ever produced have consistently, for the last 50 years, warned of the degree of control and influence that is happening here, which is unique in every other country in the world. But there's a reason for that. The reason is that the Israelis will retaliate. They won't tolerate anyone not doing what they want in a substantive way. That's what I can tell you. This is consistently what they do. It's the opposite of the average patriot. The average patriot sits at home. They get their patriotic literature. They read it. They feel that they're in the know. And that's pretty much the end of it. Why is it that you are not seeing massive marches of gun owners in this country in Washington? Why is it that you are not seeing massive demonstrations demonstrations during this United Nations thing in New York. If you have hundreds and hundreds of thousands of active gun owners who are genuinely concerned about firearms rights, about the Second Amendment, there were no glitzy press conferences by these gun groups. There was very, very, very little lobbying. And Mark can tell you this. There were written objections that I saw that were put in. There were a few people around murmuring their objections or trying very ineffectively to buttonhole people. But the things that really matter, which is massive demonstrations, credible news conferences, number two, massive distribution to media, massive public distribution of literature, and most of all, massive demonstrations. None of that happened. If you interview the gun organizations prior to the United Nations, the first thing off the top was they had no plans and they were basically hostile to the idea of placing people on the streets. Why is that? So you see what the story is here. They can meet at the United Nations. Why can they meet at the United Nations? Because first of all, for whatever reason, the gun organizations are not reacting to this in any kind of an effective way. Gee, I wonder why that might be.
I don't know. Why is that?
Well, they have to answer for themselves, okay? But when a major leader of a major gun organization, I bring up the whole idea of IANSA, and I said, what do you think of IANSA? The basic central gun control organization in the world that energizes all these other anti-gun organizations, including the gaggle of these people inside the United States. They're based in London. They're funded by the British government. What is the British government doing funding an organization that turns around and seeks to modulate political conditions inside this country? Well, they're not new at that. That's what the British did before World War II. They set up an organization, Rockefeller Center, for no other reason than to modulate political conditions inside the United States. Well, this is the same damn thing, same act, all over again.
Okay, now, but why didn't gun owner groups get off their butts?
Every American who's listening to this should get on the phone and call their gun organizations and say something very simple. Why are you not having massive demonstrations right now in Washington, D.C. when it counts? Because let me tell you what's set up here. Let me tell you what they're doing. They're collecting money, and they're collecting money, but they're going to do exactly what happened in New York State. They passed this draconian freedom-crushing bill in 3 days, mostly at night. The gun organizations absolutely knew about it. The whole gun network was buzzing about it, but no action was taken until it was passed. Then, about a week later, they had this huge demonstration in Albany where people came with signs. They were screaming bloody murder about it. What are they doing? They're setting up a demonstration to vent everybody's anger at what happened. But you'll notice that when it counted, when they could have brought people there to interfere with the actual voting and interfere with the actual process of the passing of the law, all the patriots and all the gun owners and all the so-called conservatives were nicely kept away.
Why?
Americans should be answering that question and should be asking that question of their gun organizations. But there are two observations. First of all, many of these organizations are IRS tax exempt. That's number one, and you know what that means. In effect, they are a corporation largely influenced by the IRS. And yes, it is. That is the way it works, folks. And the other thing is that the United Nations has a very powerful intelligence gathering function. They interact with many intelligence agencies through their police function, and I guarantee you that any demonstration that's going to be held near the United Nations is going to trigger every level of federal law enforcement I can possibly think of. I also do not believe that any organization that harasses the United Nations past a certain point is not going to become the object of unwelcome Justice Department attention.
There were no demonstrations at the United Nations?
I didn't see anybody.
Mark, did you see anything?
No, there were no demonstrations, and there were no visible official press conferences. And as I say, a number of sessions were closed to the press. And as noted, the press was given a very short leash, even though we were gingerly treated to a point and given reasonable access. But no demonstrations, not that the weather was the greatest, but demonstrations were completely not there, and it just didn't happen. One would expect there would have been some visible signage or placards being carried over concern over the Second Amendment, but no, Jeff's right, El Zilcho, and I kept a very close eye inside and outside. There were some peripheral pro-gun organizations in attendance, or they issued written statements that were on these literature tables, but it was all very low-key, very just observational. Yeah, there was no heat, there was no passion there, no visible demonstrations whatsoever.
What do you think? think that was?
Well, I think the perception was that this treaty deals just with international trade, which on the surface, ostensibly it does, international trade of armaments. But as I said earlier, with UN arms treaties and pacts and agreements, you have to look at the totality of it. You have to look at the other arms pacts and treaties and agreements that are already in force. And if you look at the whole thing, all armaments in all realms are ultimately affected, and they want to control the trade in arms, just like the World Trade Organization wants to control trade in everything else. Arms are, after all, another commodity, but a very important commodity, a very unique one. So it's all about centralization and harmonization of global control. And so a lot of these gun organizations, along with the factors that Jeff mentioned, just them and their members just thought that this treaty was, you know, limited to cannons and tanks. Well, it includes cannons and tanks, but it also includes small arms and light weapons. So these gun organizations are not reading the fine print, and they're letting their vigilance just, you know, wane away. It's really unwise of them to do that.
Mark, you were inside for many days. Were all of the members of the lamestream lapdog media in attendance?
Well, the way they credentialed people, you couldn't always easily tell who was from where. Mostly on the last two or three days, and definitely on March 28th, the last day of the negotiations among the delegates. Then you saw, you know, New York Times and Washington Post and those much more visibly. Prior to that, you know, you've got all this media from all over the world, a lot of Reuters people, a lot of Bloomberg people, a lot of Associated Press, you know, your World Wire Services, a lot of those sorts of reporters. But they did allow just about any kind of reporter in there. You know, the new citizen journalist is more or less allowed in there, no differently than the old conventional media. So yeah, the lamestream was there, but mainly in the latter days leading up to that final day, March 28th.
Okay, thanks. Go ahead, Jeff.
First of all, these gun organizations, I spoke to major leaders of these gun organizations. They told me that IANSA is a pop gun organization, and they dismissed it. And they were telling the members that. Secondly, I was told by the second major leader that I spoke to that whatever the United Nations did, it didn't really matter because the quote-unquote was not going to be unanimity among the nations. No, but let me tell you what actually happens. What actually happens is they may not pass it. All right, they can turn around and go to the General Assembly. At no time were gun owners told that. But the other thing is that once they have that, once, quote-unquote, most of the nations of the world vote for this, which includes Upper Volta, which includes Rwanda, which includes Pango Pango, wherever. The bottom line is that now they say, well, that gives it the color of international law. So that now they're able to transmit to the geniuses and the wonderfully uncorrupt people in Congress and in the Senate that this is generally the international standard. And don't you think America should be part of the real world and in the modern world? And don't you think we should come to a standard, the same standard that the world has adopted? How interesting. This is the psychology they're pushing. That's why when they pass something in the United Nations, whether they can directly enforce it or not, it gives a kind of a credence and a kind of a currency to it that all kinds of people at official levels inside the United States can look to and convince their largely unthinking constituents that, oh, this is something which has become the standard of international law. How interesting. This is the way it really works. But however, contrary to what most patriots may think, the United Nations is sliding into a position where they will be able to directly enforce this. They can put foreign troops in the streets. I know that's a controversial statement. That's too damn bad. If you don't think they believe to do that, you should look into some of the army maneuvers that have gone on over the last 2-3 years around the country. The bottom line is that this is a very ominous thing that's building up here. But why is it building up? It's building up because the patriots are the exact 180 degree opposite of, say, the Israelis or the British. If you cross the British, if you cross the banks, if you cross the Israelis, you're going down. They all know that. And that's why they're going to be good little boys and they're going to vote. And on the other hand, if you cross the patriots, you get patriots demonstrating maybe a week to 2 weeks later, venting their spleen over it. Then they all go home and you go on to have a wonderful retirement. That's the truth. So you know why this is happening? It's happening only because of the inaction of patriots. You can check this out right now. You can check whether there is a massive demonstration that is not planned for late May in Washington. Sure. Right after it's become a fait accompli. No? Check it out.
Okay, but you think the Patriot movement is dead?
I say the Patriot movement has been misled, and I think that from 1955 on, when they invented out of thin air this thing called conservatism, it's been misled directly. The conservatives and most of the present Patriot groups are either, first of all, they're a control and contain operation. They're to keep you controlled and keep you contained and keep you on a treadmill and keep you happy and keep you hopeful and keep you quiet and contained. And the average Patriot has been so stupid as to go along. Instead of getting in your car, putting the key in the car, and going to Washington, why is it that not one patriot holding one sign, not one gun owner holding one sign was across from the United Nations during that whole period? There are demonstrations by the Brazilian Beef Association across from the United Nations. There are demonstrations by Bulgarian associations across from the United Nations. Whenever they're doing something that they don't like the United Nations, there's 3, 4, 5 people there yelling bloody murder. It's happening almost every day. Why is it that the hundreds of thousands of patriots and gun owners that are in a 1-hour drive of New York City were not there? Why is it that, okay, the millions of people that were in shot of New York City who were having their God-given precious rights that were bought by unbelievable oceans of blood of patriots, that's being taken away by fiat, and you guys sit at home and don't do anything? Well, guess what? You don't deserve freedom, and you won't have it very long. Understand how dangerous and vicious and poisonous these people in New York and London are. They're not your local liberal kids. They're something much bigger, and the thing is much more dangerous. But listen to me. No matter how small you feel, you know, if you jump up and down on the arm of a giant, he just flicks you off. If you jump up and down on the eyeball of a giant, whatever he's doing, he's got to stop and pay attention to you. It interrupts whatever he's doing. Well, the eyeball of the giant is New York City and London. So, okay, I don't say you should swim to London, but you can darn well get in a car and come here and yell bloody murder. And you can darn well go to Washington, and you can darn well yell bloody murder in massive amounts, because if you had a Tea Party type thing, which was more intelligent than the Tea Party. I mean, the Tea Party met. They had 1 million people there, believe me, folks. And to meet to what? To listen to Michelle Bachmann talk to them? And then they all went home. They were there one day. But what if there was a persistent force of patriots that came to Washington, and it was like Coxey's army, or it was like the bonus marchers, and they stayed there? They were a persistent presence. The second thing is, why is it that you people, all these people that are trying to take away your rights, a high degree of them are corrupt, and a high degree of them are engaging in illegal activities of one kind or another? What does it matter? You can't put some money on the street and find out what's going on and drop a dime on them. That's too tough to do. Well, your opponents don't think that. They do that all the time. If you cross the British, if you cross any of these groups, even any major NGO, they'll put money on the street to find out what you're doing. And then believe me, there'll be IRS at your door. Believe me, there'll be federal agents at your door. That's the way they work. Well, why aren't you doing that? All right? Well, you don't want to do that? Oh, that's not exactly conservative to do. Fine. That's why you're losing.
All right. Well, nobody did show up. That's indisputable.
How did that happen?
Well, that's what I asked you. All right.
Yeah.
And we don't know why, but nobody did show up. We don't know exactly why, but there was nobody there.
And there was no distribution of literature to the press. I mean, they had 1 or 2 scraps of paper and some gun groups there, the Black Powder Association, murmuring they don't think this is a cool thing. Do you think anybody cares about that? No. Well, let me tell you what works. What works is bodies. What works is volume. What works is yelling bloody murder. And what works is retaliation.
Well, obviously, that
all
didn't
that
happen.
Stuff,
it didn't happen.
Yes.
It didn't happen.
And that's why you're losing. Right. That's why you're losing your freedom.
Right. You did not have one person.
But now you have. But now you have a second round, folks. The second round is in Congress right now. You can interfere with the second round. If there were massive demonstrations in Washington, or maybe 20 congressmen not only lost their job, but went to jail. And then the gun groups called the news conferences, and we found out about this, and we dropped a dime because of what this guy did. This is straight retaliation, folks. Guess what would happen in the rest of Congress? You think you'd have Chuck Schumer on his hind legs screaming at you from a New York pulpit? You think you'd have Bloomberg running around? Why do you see all that happening? That's happening because of your inaction and your stupidity of your inaction.
Maybe America's done, Jeff.
No, I don't think America's done, but I wouldn't be on this phone yelling at you if I thought that.
Well, not yet.
You know
yet.
Where I'd be? I'd be in one of those compounds that the ultra-rich, the ultra-wealthy, are no longer in New York City because of the danger. danger of being here. They're on the compounds all over the world, where they have 5 to 10 years supply of non-GMO, non-irradiated food, and they sit on that nice aquifer, and they're giving orders from afar while America burns down. Because why? Because they started the fires. They know the fire's going to spread. If I thought that America was really finished, hey, I'd be somewhere nice and safe. I'm not. I'm in New York City. You know why? Because the giant's eyeball is still here. And if people were to jump up and down on it correctly, the nonsense would stop or it would slow way down. And as far as Washington is concerned, folks, if you legally take out, remember what I said, legally take out maybe 20 congressmen and send them to jail, if you were to cause a serious effect in Congress and in the federal bureaucracy and a whole series of things, guess what would happen? What would happen is all this thing would reverse in one day because they're all cowards. The only reason why they're strutting around doing this is because they're assured that you'll do nothing of an effective nature.
If I may interject.
Go ahead, Mark.
To amplify or continue what Jeff is saying there, we do have another round, and that includes the fact that at least they're saying right now that this would have to be, as a treaty, approved by our U.S. Senate. Now, they might try and work that way around it through executive fiat. We don't know. That's a possibility. But as it stands right now, at least to the best of my understanding, the U.S. Senate would have to take the arms trade treaty and act on it like they would any other treaty, and that would require a 2/3 majority according to the Constitution. So maybe that's not the eye of the giant, but maybe it's the right arm or a nearby appendage of the giant there in Washington, D.C., not far from New York, where patriots still could make a lot of noise and they can attend congressional sessions. They can watch right from the gallery. They can go there. You don't just write letters. But a lot of people are very cynical. They say it doesn't do any good to contact Congress, but it's a lot worse not to contact them. It's a lot worse not to go there. It may seem futile at times to go there or to contact them, but right now is a very critical time before this treaty has a lot of time to advance. Let's not let happen what happened in Albany, where they acted too little too late. Let's act in advance on the Senate while this treaty goes through roughly a 1 to 2 to 3 year approval period. They only need 50 nations to put the treaty into force. That's only roughly 1/4 of the nations on Earth. That's not a very high threshold. So if we're not going to be belated and too late, too little patriots, we've got to act now to influence the Senate. And that's very important. And Senator Inhofe, for what it's worth, as we reported in AFP, was one of 7 co-sponsors of Senate Amendment 139, which amended Senate Concurrent Resolution 8 against the UN Arms Trade Treaty. That amendment was approved 53-46 on March 23rd, even before the Arms Trade Treaty talks ended. It may not be a real meaningful amendment, but it is something to build on.
Right.
And we could be decidedly skeptical that this is maybe just a gesture meant to maybe soothe the masses within the conservative movement. Maybe that's true, maybe it's not. But we don't want what happened in Albany to happen again. And this is at least one opportunity to not let it become like the Trans-Pacific Partnership, where the Senate isn't allowed to read anything until right. All of a sudden the TPP arrives and then the Senate is forced to vote on it. That's one important question. How much of the arms trade treaty is being shared among members of Congress before they have to act on it as a treaty in the Senate? Is this being kept from them like the Trans-Pacific Partnership until the last minute, or is it not? That's something that AFP needs to find out for its readers.
Right.
Yes.
The main thing right now is immediate action. You've got this thing in Congress right now. Patriots need to act right now. There are two things that matter in this. Number one, bodies in the street while it is in Congress and while it is being debated. The more critical moment, the better. The more roaring crowds in Washington, the more street corner distribution of literature, particularly provocative literature, the more disruption of the political network of the cynical holders of public office around the country, the better. The more guys you make lose their jobs, and better yet, the more guys you find out stuff and you drop a dime on, where prosecutors have got to act. If you did that with 20 congressmen and you did that with maybe 10 senators, the whole thing would turn around, because two things matter. The first thing matters is public people in the street. Now, the British work a little differently, but I can tell you right now, if Israel's, for example, interests are in any way involved seriously, the Congress knows that there can be 10 million people in the street the next day. They know that. There'll be unbelievable crowds, and the tone of them will be unbelievable, too. And they also know that they're finished. Their careers are finished, and they're not only finished, but whoever they're involved with in shady affairs or things where they're kind of getting away with things with the IRS, all their partners, they all have partners. Well, guess what? The congressman is going to go down, and all his partners are going to go down, because they'll tie them all to a conspiracy. And that's why the partners will be calling up yelling, bloody murder. What are you doing? What are you doing? That's the way it really works in Washington. None of these guys are really clean, and they have the temerity to tell you that they'll decide what your rights are, and they'll take away whatever your rights are. Well, that's because of happening of your inaction, and there are two things that matter: fighting in the streets and retaliation. That's what you've got left. If any patriotic leader tells you differently, he isn't working on your side at this point. I've been out here a long time, folks. I've seen patriotic leaders and organizations come and go. What do we have as a result of 40, 50 years of patriotic activism? We have one or two really good publications left, and we have you. You, the local patriot. And you, the local patriot, have got to get off your duff and do something now. But you've got to do something, and it's got to be intelligent action, because just screaming and yelling alone isn't going to reverse this. But generally, the two key things now are bodies in the street, distribution of literature in the street, both local and in Washington. And yes, you have to do it on both levels. And you've got to be a watchdog out there. You've got to be a truth hound. You know, there's a wonderful reporter whose email is truth hound. And the thing is that you've got to be the truth hound out there. You've got to find out what's going on, and then you've got to blow a whistle in such a way that somebody loses their job and somebody goes to jail, and then you get to have freedom. Otherwise, all the oceans of blood that patriots have spilled on this country to secure your freedoms are all going to be washed away. A deluge of filth coming from places like New York and London and the United Nations and the other noxious and obnoxious crazy things. And by the way, if you don't believe this, come to New York and watch, ask a local cop on the Upper East Side what he thinks about the diplomatic corps and the behavior of people in the United Nations who hold diplomatic and UN status. What they've caught these guys doing to women, what they've caught these guys doing with drugs and stolen gold and all kinds of things. Just look for the oil for gold scandal. Where are the billions that passed through that? Nobody's explaining that to you. I mean, do you have any idea how many hundreds of millions of dollars that have gone to the United Nations are unreported and never checked what's really going on with them? How can this be going on under your nose and all the Congress are quiet about it? Because there are very few John Rareks left. That's why. So the thing is, what I'm saying to you basically is it's up to you now. It comes down to you, the average patriot. Thank you.
You heard it, folks. Mark saying contact your representatives. Jeff saying get out there in the street, distribute the literature, and try to find dirt on these people. Either way, something's got to be done. Gentlemen, thank you for your time. Mark Anderson, American Free Press roving editor. Jeff Smith, American Free Press Eastern Bureau chief. Thanks again for the time you took out explaining all this to the listeners about the United Nations conference on the Arms Trade Treaty, ATT 2013. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.